first, but he's like cut his finger with a saw or stepped on a nail, and he just can't handle the thought of like having to go to the hospital.
Did you just stitch it up yourself?
One time he just calls me and he's like, I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm laying on the ground with my feet in the air. I'm about to pass out. I think I just cut my finger off. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, do you want us to come over? He's like, please. You get over there and he's laying down like this. His feet are in the air and he's holding his hand like out. And you're like, Jackie's like, okay, let me see it. Pulls his fingers back and he had barely nicked it. Like it wasn't even bleeding. He's like, oh, that was it. I feel stupid now.
Is there a memory card in there?
Yeah, it's in. I just put it in.
I've got pictures of my wife. He was like, oh, we're talking about blood pressure. And she just goes and gets the blood pressure cuff out of her car. And he just goes stark pale, starts sweating. He's like, she's like, are you sure you want me to do this? And he's like, yeah. His blood pressure was so low. Jackie's like, are you?
Why are you scared of the
out?
Blood pressure thing?
I don't know. I can just picture a needle popping out of it when it's really tight.
Like, I get a little bit of anxiety right before they let it go. Where I'm like, or the ones at the store where it's like a machine that's doing it to you.
Oh, you know, the like store? At the drugstore. Yeah, because once you're in, there's
like,
no coming
out.
There's
a vice grip on your arm. You could just live there.
Oh yeah, I've been with them. We drive past like the blood donation bus, not where they're doing it, but like where they park them for the night. And he's like, oh God.
Where they park them for the night. There's so many needles in there.
Howdy, folks. We have a real special episode for you today. Todd Harney and Ben Britton are veterans of the hunting industry and have recently joined the Western Hunter team. These guys are a real kick in the pants, and this podcast is very full of laughs. So full, in fact, there are times when things get a little noisy. I did my best to repair some pops and nose booger whistles, but it's such a fun one that you probably won't even notice them. Enjoy.
Is it on right now?
Yeah, oh, it's recording.
It's been recording.
We can start right now. I guess maybe a slight intro. So anyone listening, all of our listeners, welcome back for another episode of the Wilderness Athlete Podcast. We are here in our office. I've got Courtney Denham to my right. I've got Todd Harney here and Ben Britton. Some of you guys may know him, some of you may not. But that's why we're here today, is talk a little bit more about who these two gentlemen are, what little things they have in their past that we all think we should know about, and just kind of solve the world's
all
problems.
All the things.
It's a lot of things.
No, so, only the little ones.
Yeah.
Just we'll leave the big ones.
The big ones. Yeah,
some of the stories you told us last night, you can leave off.
Yeah.
That happened in Elko. Okay. Yeah. We'll leave those out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, what happens in Elko stays in Elko.
Yeah. It's an important rule.
So what you guys, you're here in Arizona, you're visiting our offices here. We've been in meetings for the past few days, covering all of the different projects we have in motion with Western Hunter and Outdoorsman's and Wilderness Athlete, and figuring out, you know, where you guys might fit in and be able to help, because you guys are both extremely experienced in not just hunting, but working within the hunting industry and, you know, creating content and just being subject matter experts to some degree in a lot of, you know, unique things that our industry is interested in. So that's why you're here, and we know that. But what the listeners don't know is a little bit more about what you guys are all about and how you guys got into hunting in the first place and where you grew up and all that stuff. So I know you guys have known each other since like kindergarten, right?
Yeah. Been a really long time.
Yeah.
Gosh, we've both been hunting our whole lives. I think I remember going out to the duck blind first when I was eight.
Nice.
8 years old. But most of that was, you know, local private land, deer hunting and pig hunting, duck hunting. Didn't really get into the backpack stuff till Todd took me to Nevada in 2012.
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, it was such a miserable trip. I was hooked and kept going back.
And where are you from again?
Monterey County.
Okay.
California.
Both, right?
Carmel Valley. Specifically.
Okay.
And I grew up where my dad was backpack hunting. And I remember being a little kid and seeing him leave and gone for a week. And the garage was empty of hunting gear. And then my mom would finally tell me when he's coming back, and helping him pull buckheads out of the back of the truck from out of state trips and stuff. And then, doing the local deer hunting on the coast, and, fast forward into high school, and I'm all hooked on the forum thing, 'cause that was about the time that was taken off, and, just, you know, lifelong passion.
Yeah. Well, Mike, shout out to Mike, 'cause you've told me some crazy stories about some of the bucks your dad's killed.
Yeah. His dad's one of my favorite people. He's just, what is he like? Almost 60.
Yeah. He's 59.
Tough as nails. Refuses to wear any base layer bottoms or anything. He says he doesn't get cold. I've seen him sitting there eating a Wilderness Athlete slushy from snow, shivering his ass off. And I'm like, Mike, are you cold? Oh, no, I'm not. I don't get cold.
I don't think people from that generation do get cold.
No.
I think that's just like a rule.
Yeah, they have a lot less nerve endings.
They've died at this point. Oh, yeah. Well, so a little bit of interesting backstory, and it's how I met Todd was at Sonoma State University when we were in college. And you know, for people who don't know, Sonoma State's extremely, you know, it's a small college, small university, a liberal arts college up in Northern California in wine country. So, you know, you can imagine the worldviews that we're walking around, and we were both in the environmental studies degree and path. And so we had a lot of courses together. I think where a lot of some of the similarities we had came to a head was in conservation biology with Caroline Christian, and all of our courses were, you know, mostly conversation based, you know, input based, and discussing big ideas of like land management and population
conservation.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And it came to a head pretty quick that Todd and I were the only ones that were pro killing and eating animals, you know,
on the whole campus, probably.
Right. As a means for conservation. And so we butted heads with people in class quite often. And that was just an interesting dynamic. And
I think we got a lot of people to come around over time, though.
We did.
It got to the point where they would always ask our opinions on certain topics to almost see it from the other side.
Yeah, because it was different than what everyone else was, you know, thinking and talking about. I did that one project on wetland conservation. It was like that one class we have with Laura Watt.
How do you remember the names of the professors in college? Because
they were influential. They were awesome.
I mean, one of them, first or last name.
Laura and Christian were
they impactful were hot, people. They?
They were one of them.
I've heard stories.
One of them was okay.
one of them was all right. Yeah, for sure. But we, gosh, now we can't let them hear this
because they're going to really listening.
Well, they're going to fight on which one it was. Like, who are they talking about? Which one is it?
They'll never know.
But we, I remember I did a whole like semester long project on wetland conservation. And like, I can't remember what the whole purpose of the project was, but it was like showing different angles of conservation. And I think we both did it on hunting, and we got by far the most like interaction and questions and discussion around those presentations than anybody else. 'Cause you know, it's just different from what everyone else was talking about or thinking about. But,
Everyone else is basing their ideas off what they're reading in the textbook. Mm-hmm. And we're able to speak from our experience of being outside our whole lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And then fast forward a little bit, like I graduated, I went to work for the Department of Fish and Game. Todd went to work for Kuyu, and that was, you know, kind of a cool, like I had this passion of always wanting to be close to hunting. And I thought working within a resource agency was like the best way for me to do it. Todd figured out a little bit of a better way to do it.
How did you get started at Kuyu? Like what led you there?
Well, they were still really new brand. And I was, so we graduated in 2013.
And I graduated in 2012.
I was going to say.
Was it 12?
I graduated a year before you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was probably a Kuyu customer sometime in 2012, graduated in spring of 13, and I had broken one of their backpack frames while I was still a student. And, you know, their showroom was only an hour or so away. So I said, well, I've got a day off of class. I'm going to drive over there and just exchange for a new one in person, check out their store and whatever. So I brought my pack over there, and, you know, a lot of places they've got a nice website and stuff, but you actually go to their office and things are a lot smaller than what you envision by, you know, this brand that has a number of products and stuff. And it was so small that Jason Hairston was walking around in there. And he followed me out to the parking lot and we got to talking and he said, we're growing. And we'd kind of like, he recognized me because I'd go to the sheep show and had checked out their stuff earlier that year. And he said, let's stay in touch. And when you graduate, maybe you can come work over here. And so it worked out that way. He held up his end and responded to my emails. And like a week after graduating in May of 2013, moved over there and started going to work.
That's cool.
Yeah. Small team. There was, you know, less than 10 of us at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty cool. Started in customer service, answering phones. And then, I mean, it was so early on that one day a guy had broken a buckle on his gaiters and I had him on the phone and he's like, okay, well, I broke a buckle and you guys say you have a lifetime warranty on your products. So I put him on hold and I said, does anybody know what we do about the warranty? and that kind of transpired into I started the warranty department. Mm-hmm. So real early on type stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. How about you, Ben? How did you kind of get wrapped into that?
Oh, place? I mean, about the time Todd was heading over there to work, I was working in construction in Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
Jealous as I'll get out. And, you know, I was driving to the dump, jealous of Todd working in the hunting industry while I'm taking trash to the dump after demoing a house. And just one evening, I just get a text from him. He's like, hey, you want to come work for Kuyu? And it was like, hey, honey. You want to move to Sacramento? And she agreed and we went up there. It was late 2013. Started out just building all the backpack orders. I think about that time we were lucky if what we had like 15 packs to build a day. Right after that trade show hit. So Todd was going off to trade show and someone needed to cover warranty. And then I ended up taking that over from him immediately and ran that for like 4 years. But that's kind of how I got started. Cool. At that point, Todd's, oh, come up for an interview. You know, Jason's going to be, you know, he's going to put you in a chair in the middle of the room with the light on you. He's going to ask you a ton of questions. You show up and they're like, oh, yeah, when can you start? Like, that was no question number one of my interview is when can I start?
That was kind of like how the Outdoorsmen's used to hire. When mm-hmm. you got hired at the mm-hmm. Outdoor, when Kevin got hired at the Outdoorsmen's, it was like, oh, you're able-bodied and you're willing to work here? Cool. You're hired.
Yeah, it's but when I moved to Arizona, I had like put some feelers out on a forum and it was Coos Deer.
Coos Whitetail.com
is a pretty big forum down here in the Southwest. And just kind of been a post with, you know, my history, my background, my degree and like what things I'm interested in and said, I'm looking for work if anyone's got any leads. And the Outdoorsman's had an account on that forum and said, yeah, we're looking for, you know, both part-time and full-time, you know, reach out to Cody Nelson when you get here or just give him a shout and see what you can do. And so I did, had a couple conversations and when I actually got here, like the next day, I got here like on a Tuesday. So like on Wednesday, I went down to Outdoorsman's to meet him and the team. And he'd kind of, you know, thought it was going to be like an interview and such. And it wasn't. It was just meet the guys and let's talk about your schedule, you know. And so it was awesome because, I mean, one of my biggest fears was like, man, what am I going to do for work when I get to a new state? And yeah, it was kind of serendipitous because it's put me in a really good situation in my life. And I don't regret a minute of it. It was a really, really cool company to land into. But it's funny, humble beginnings.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys both started at the ground level. And, you know, I've had that experience. Courtney's had that experience. But
Somewhat. Mine's weirder, but that's
all
right.
Yeah. But
I started when I was zero, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's cool. I mean, the cool part about the humble beginnings thing is like you start. You know, whether it's a company at the ground level or whatever, like there's just so much passion that's driving everything, you know? So
when the CEO or the owner, like parking lots you, as we call it here, when someone forces you to talk in the parking lot, to hire you, like
adjacent,
just out of a good conversation. I mean, that's so cool. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
After that company is as big as it is now.
It's pretty inspiring.
Yeah. And to have that connection with the founder of the company. I remember when I was trying to get Kevin to leave the Outdoorsman's and not take a Game and Fish job to come work for Wilderness Athlete, I had Mark and Floyd give you like the their own mm-hmm. versions of.
They grilled me.
Yeah, Mark was nice and inspiring, and then Floyd, I think, told you that if you took the Game and Fish job, he would make sure you got fired.
Yeah.
If you didn't come work for Wilderness, he's like, I got connections there. You're not getting that job. Yeah. I'm like, dang, and Floyd, that was a little rough.
And the way he said it, just like you believed that he had every one of those connections to make it happen.
He might not have had one, but so, yeah, he's got a great poker face. Like,
oh, he's not bluffing.
If you don't work for me, I'm going to ruin your life.
Exactly. That's Floyd's version, and then Mark's version was probably like, come build this. We're going to build something awesome and da-da-da. But,
but either way, to know that you're wanted somewhere goes a long way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it makes you feel like a huge part of it. Yeah. Especially throughout the years and what it became. Like, you're like, wow, like, I was here when it first started and things were hard.
Yeah.
For
and
sure.
Then now it's- to have those memories of, like, you guys were telling me earlier about the building packs and then, like, throwing them in the back of your truck to take them down to the warehouse and, like, at times that's it, what the outdoorsman's does at times. And we're definitely at a place closer to where you guys were at with Kuyu 5-6 years ago, where some days we load up a bunch of packs in the back of a pickup to get down to the warehouse in time. And like, those are memories you're always going to have when you don't get
busy
to
season hit anymore. And we would both go down there probably 3 times a day, you know?
Yeah.
Load of packs, and then all returns came back to the office. So they had to be folded and repackaged and relabeled and taken back down to the warehouse and put back into inventory, and that was all us.
I know. I feel we've got a new kid now running the warehouse. His name's Cody, and I think he drives back and forth from the office to the warehouse. And this is for outdoorsmen's. I think he drives back and forth like 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. I should pay him for mileage because it's like
town.
A 2-mile drive.
It's a small town.
Yeah,
he's got it easy.
But it's so cool to be like a part of building something like that. And I get really inspired by employees who are willing to do that, to like be a jack of all trades and to wear many hats and to say like, we need a warranty department. Not, where's the warranty department? I can't believe you guys don't have a warranty department.
Yeah.
But I'm going to start one because I see that that's what this company needs. And it takes, I mean, that's hard to find people that will behave that way and that will take ownership of a company like that.
And that's how it was there for a long time, is just, it's like, there's constantly, you have to be, there's so much volume increasing all the time that you're constantly trying to keep up with what's going on and manipulate what you're doing to be able to handle it better.
Yeah.
So
growing at that rate is so freaking, it's exciting but it's so hard. you either don't have enough money or you don't have enough inventory or you don't have enough employees. Usually 2 out of 3 of those things is what I've decided. Like it's you're always going to have 2 out of 3 if you're doubling the company or even growing at a quick pace. Like,
if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Cause that means that something's going right.
Yeah.
I remember the first garage sale that me and Mark Paulson went to. And I think it might've been the first garage sale you guys had.
I don't think.
What year was it?
No, probably the second.
Because you guys built the garage sale pretty much,
right? The garage sale was just a result of
I was running warranty, having all this stuff come in that, you know, some of it's not bad.
Yeah.
Like I'd wear it myself, you know, a couple stitching coming out, but enough to where a guy would be like, you know what? I just bought this and I kind of want to, you know, be the first one to do this, or I don't want to, this seemed to fall apart, and it'd come in and it started stacking up to the point where like, you know, we had to store it at the warehouse and they're looking at finances going, oh, yeah, well, like, we're paying to store this stuff and we can't continue to just keep growing the storage of stuff we're not selling. Yeah. That doesn't make
hoarding.
Any sense.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, and there's one other guy at the office and we all sat together and came up with an idea for the garage sale and let's just sell it for $40. I mean, we're not going to make a ton of money, but we're not going to make our cost back, but it's good for the customer. It's a great experience. They get in Kuyu, they go out there and maybe they come back and buy something new eventually, but we've given them a good experience and a fun thing. You know, we'd have tacos for
They were so much fun.
Yeah, we would always come back so excited about
like
that.
Like when Mark and I went to the first one, I can't remember how many employees you guys had at the time. It was, I don't know, I think it was south of, it was around 20 maybe. But like, I think we were there with Patrick and he was kind of telling us like, yeah, we just hired X, Y, and Z. And we got back to the hotel that night and Mark was like, you know, we're going to grow someday like that. Like, we're going to have that many employees someday. Because then we came back the next year and it was like the number of employees had, you know, reached another magnitude. And like, we were seeing a bunch of new faces.
It got wild west when it got big. I saw a grown man jump over a child.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Sprinting and just dove to get a jacket.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, wow.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's like Black Friday status for hunting industry.
Yeah. And I mean, we, you know, every year was like, okay, well, last year we had people who were just taking armfuls going to the side, filtering through it, taking what they want and leaving it. It's like, okay, well, now you have a 4-item minimum at checkout. You can do as many checkouts as you want, but you have to come back in to
I remember Mark and I were sitting there because we had our booth set up, and any of the vendors there, you know, be Goal Zero and different guides and taxidermists and stuff. And we were sitting there while all the people, you know, lined up before they let everyone in.
Yeah.
And like in the front of the line was like the first 10 or 15 people were wives who were just on their phone, like literally on their phone with their husbands. Because their husbands were working or something, and they were like, this is what they got. This is the size. This is this. So there was some scheming going on.
And oh, yeah. Guys with binoculars glassing all the stuff to try and find what they wanted.
Yeah. They were scheming for sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It got bigger every – just, you know, everything around there for a while got bigger every year, and we had to make new rules to manage that, but also introduce new things like the seminars we did that time, and Mark did that seminar, and – have more vendors, and then the food. And then the one year we even had that mobile showroom kickoff.
Yeah. There. We had the Cool You World Tour kickoff at a garage sale. That was, you were there.
Yeah. And then we did the one here in Scottsdale because it came here to the mall in Scottsdale. And, I won't lie. That was pretty pitiful. Like we thought we were going to, there was like 10 dudes like who came the weekend we were there.
Yeah.
Like it just didn't go well. Maybe.
Yeah. How did the World Tour do? Did it do well? I thought it was such a cool idea.
Some cities did good. Some cities didn't do as good. I went out and worked the one in Denver. I think you went to Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I mean, it only lasted 1 year, but
Scottsdale didn't do well. I can.
Yeah.
But even for years after that, we would still be getting emails from people or run into people at trade shows who said that they learned about it because of the World Tour.
Yeah. It's one of those, like we talk about trade shows all the time. Is it, do we break even? Because especially in the, at the Outdoorsman's, our margins are so slim on optics that you got to sell a lot of optics to pay for going to a trade show like SEI. Mm-hmm. And so you always have that gut feeling like, am I making the right decision by spending this tens and thousands of dollars to go? But all year long, it's, I met you guys at SEI. And even if they didn't buy, I met you guys at Salt Lake City. I met you. And so that residual like face-to-face or the residual benefit of that face-to-face contact. I wonder if the World Tour would have done better if it had been you guys or, you know, Kuyu guys there, because it was ran by another company, right?
Yeah. There's a third party.
And we were talking about this earlier, kind of like the how much authenticity matters. And I asked you guys, what happened? Like, what made Kuyu go from this little brand that Jason started to grow at the pace that it did at such a crazy rate and have this like rabid fan base, like people who love Kuyu, just, it's like a religion. What made that happen?
I mean, it was authenticity and Jason's desire to include the customer base in on as much going on with the brand as he could, to the point where people felt like they were part of something by virtue of just following it and being a customer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was the guy that was, you know, the customer is always right. Like, take care of the customer. You know, I was running warranty and, you know, you get pretty complacent. Working warranty, you know, no one's happy when their stuff breaks. Yeah. You get complacent. You're like, oh, this guy wants to replace this and this and this. And Jason's like, why would you want to make him mad over a pair of pants? Just switch it out.
Yeah.
And that's why kind of the garage sale came, because it's like, okay, well, here, we're going to eventually have a garage sale. So we'll take it in and sell it.
That's before Donald Miller, you know?
Yeah, I know, before, right? Before, you know, we were taught all this stuff. But like Floyd, and I keep referencing Floyd, he's the owner of the Outdoorsman's and one of the owners of Wilderness Athlete and Western Hunter. He's taught me from a long time ago that not only is the customer always right about their gear and what they have, but all of your product development has to come from the customer. Mm-hmm. He's like, all of the parts that the Outdoorsman makes, he said every single one of them, and still to this day, every single one of them was inspired by either a change that a customer wanted or something that a customer asked about or was, you know, thought we could do better. And especially when you're working warranty, like when you're in our guys down in customer service for both Wilderness Athlete and Outdoorsman's, a lot of times they'll get that, this guy called and he's mad about this. God, how dare he? And I have two things that I remind them all the time. Our customers sign your paychecks. So I don't know why you're going to bitch about our customers, because you wouldn't be here if it weren't for them. And B, like, you have to learn from that experience. Like they paid their hard-earned money. They went to work for 40 hours a week or more, and they chose to trade those dollars for your product. And then you're going to get pissy because they're not happy with it. And like, no, that's on us now. And I did watch Kuyu like do that. And I think that does build like a rabid, fan base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then on top of all of it, you got to have, you know, the quality product, which
right.
was yeah, that always sure.
What, I'm trying to think how I'm going to phrase this question. What role do you think that like good or bad, that, you know, career you had, that time in your life, like had in your like career as like a hunter, you know, as a backpack hunter, like did it, do you think like if you had never gone to work for Kuyu that you would be as into backpack hunting to this, you know, tenacious level?
Are we calling it tenacious?
I already was before that. And I don't think it'd be any different. I think if I didn't work there, then I would have probably had more big hunts
maybe
done by now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we still would have done it. I mean, we may not have
really
been
encouraged to go hunting that much. In fact, we were actually told that we couldn't hunt together at a certain
point. Yeah. Well, that's true. So
you're just too valuable for both to be gone at the same time. I don't love it when all of our guys go hunting at once. Like right now, the three guys are on a bear hunt. Mm-hmm. It kind of sucks that three guys are out of the office at the same time, especially during our busy season.
But they better kill something.
They won't.
They didn't.
I'm sorry. They're going to listen to this. They're going to listen to this. I shouldn't say that.
But you would probably hate it even more if you only hired people who didn't hunt.
Oh, that would
because
that
you'd lose
work.
All your authentic yeah, voice when someone calls.
Work. And, no, and you got to. I love that. I mean, I was telling you guys earlier. I love that everyone here can go hunting whenever they want, and that's a great part of our company culture. But there are days, especially like it's not as bad now because we've grown to a point where we have more resources to handle it. But like 2 years ago. Now we have a draw system at the Outdoorsman. So they have to draw before they put in for their tags. So they aren't all gone at the same time because last year they all drew like four of the Outdoorsman's guys drew like really good tags the same freaking week. And like, what am I going to do? Like either you close the shop or, you know, close customer service. You can't do that. Yeah. So they all ended up just hunting a couple days each and like coming and covering for each other. But yeah, we definitely value letting people, because you have to go test the products and you have to mm-hmm. like when a customer calls, you have to have field experience. You can't be like, well, I read in a book that this panhead works this way, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Well, I mean, I guess you can if you're able to rely on the past authenticity of your brand.
Yeah, and we won't let that happen.
That's true.
Good choice.
Anyway.
But yeah, back to Kevin's question. We probably, you know, we would definitely still be hunting because we hunted long before Kuyu.
Yeah.
And Kuyu definitely wasn't the reason that we hunted. Now, would we be as obsessed with the gear or as knowledgeable about the gear as we are now? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, we learned a ton over the years, but we would definitely be probably hunting a lot more, especially in November.
Yeah.
Well, if you guys, and it looks like you are, but if you guys end up joining our team, you know, you can hunt a lot more. So that's good.
Yeah. It's hard to talk shop when you don't do much time in shop, you know, like if you can't really speak to your customer on their level and like speak authentically about what you're doing. And I feel like hunters have a unique sense, and especially in any niche market or any niche thing. You can tell when someone's full of shit or when
so
someone's
fast.
Just selling. So yeah, like we were talking
right through it.
Yeah. Like we were talking about that, you know, concept for an article that you might want to work on down the road, which is, you know, how to wade through the bullshit of marketing, which you could apply to almost any industry, but like, you know,
especially the supplement industry.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. The supplement industry and then the hunting industry. Like,
and then you mix those two things together. And the level of BS that we see out there is just like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, scientifically, what you're saying doesn't even mm-hmm. make any sense. But people are like, oh, well, it gives me a pump. So, what's that? What does that mean to you?
I mean, you get into apparel and, you know, everything is built for the most extreme conditions.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, I don't know. Like, it's that extreme. Like, why am I out there?
Yeah. One of the things that I've always kind of found interesting is like in 2020, materials and technology and all that has developed to a point where there's probably not a lick of clothing that you could buy out there from Big Five or otherwise that you would die with if you were on the mountain. But
yeah.
But every hunting company would have you believe that anything else is like risking your life, you know, on the top of a mountain or something.
If you don't have this new jacket, you are going to be the least successful hunter in the state.
Well, we use it in our marketing though. And we mm-hmm. fully believe this, like guys go and spend. And I think Mark talked about this when he did a seminar at Kuyu, like the guys are spending thousands and thousands of dollars on their external gear, if not tens of thousands, some of our outdoorsman's customers, but, mm-hmm. on their gear for outside, and then they don't prepare themselves physically whatsoever. And so Mark always says, and it's something we say around here, the most important piece of equipment you own is you. Like, you can be out there in jeans and a t-shirt and be more effective than a guy decked in all the gear he could possibly have that's, you know, didn't shoot his bow and didn't work out a lick this year. And, you know,
yeah, I mean, I've never seen a backpack, boots and clothes out in the hills without somebody in them.
That's a good point. So they can't be that magical.
Yeah. I time and time again, after you talk to guides and you ask, like, you hear them talk about, like, the biggest struggle with clients is two things, is physical preparedness, like if they're in shape, and did they break their boots in? And it's usually those two things. But never, ever, ever have I heard somebody say, well, his clothing was just too heavy. Like, yeah. He just wasn't wicking the moisture, man.
Yeah, because you know the guys that are on those hunts, they probably are decked in the newest Kuyu gear. Oh,
yeah.
And
yeah, man, I hiked to the top of the hill and I saw a guy just frozen. He was frozen. No, I still haven't seen it. I'm waiting for him.
He's just sitting there.
Yeah, he's just frozen in place. He was wearing the wrong clothes.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. We should... That's funny.
So one of the things that we've been talking about here this week is, we're trying to bring, like, Western Hunter up to speed a little bit with some of the content creation. We're trying to, like, grow some projects with Outdoorsmen and Wilderness Athlete. And one of the conversations we were just having is how blurry the line is between, like what is work and what is just your passion, and, like, you're doing your passion a little bit more constructively. And sometimes I think that gets lost in companies and in culture. And I feel like that's something that our team here, and I'm going to toot our own horn, that we've just preserved really well, is just being able to keep people alive in the sense that they've never lost that passion for hunting and the reason why they hunt. And they're not jaded. But I see people all the time, you know, guides, people who are in, like, the TV show side of hunting, they get jaded pretty quick. And I think if you're not, you know, careful with how much of your time and such you spend in your company, or what, you know, just the environment and such, that you can lose that pretty quick.
Did you guys ever feel that when Kuyu was growing at that rapid pace and you're working crazy hours and did you ever want to say, like, I would never want to see another hunting backpack? Like, did you ever feel burnt out?
Oh, definitely not the beginning. I mean, I would say the first 5 years were awesome. I mean, you'd show up to work and you'd be ready to put together packs or talk to customers, and eventually it started to go down a different path, and where you do start, you're like, oh man, I'm gonna have to talk about, you know, jackets again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's days I just don't want to talk about powder or pills or tripods or hunting anymore, you know. But I think that's why it's super important to take time for yourself and go out and actually do the things that we're talking about, and without a camera or without, you know, expectation that you're going to be working in the field. But
one of the things, I don't know who said it, you know, you probably have said it, you know, no one cares as much about the thing as the person who created it, you know? And that's, I think you can see that in a lot of examples in life. But did you guys notice a huge change in the culture or just your connection to the brand after Jason passed away?
Yeah.
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 Huge.
Well, yeah. Go back even. I mean, what was it like working for Jason?
It was empowering. I mean, he would, even down to little things, like he'd come up with this idea, whether it lasted very long or not, but just to give an example of the way he led and the way he thought. One day he had us all in a team meeting and he's like, I have this idea where I want everybody to spend 1 hour of their work day just working on anything that they purely enjoy working on.
I've heard that before.
I don't care what department it's in. I don't care what it is. If it's something productive that could help the brand that you enjoy doing, I want you to work on that. And, I mean, that's,
what did you work on? Do you remember?
I started writing blog posts.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a while you had the hunt page on there that was kind of
Todd's. He let me have my own blog on there, and just the freedom to continue doing things within the scope of his vision and feeling like you had 100% of his backing, whether it turned out to be successful or not. The point was that you were trying to do something to go outside the lines or above and beyond, and enjoy doing it.
That's awesome.
I mean, he was a presence I mean, an irreplaceable presence for the brand for sure. But, you know, he walked into a room and like people wanted to see him.
Yeah.
People wanted to talk to him. You go to trade show and you're like, Jason, can you like go somewhere else?
Because oh, I know. I remember.
The front of the booth is packed.
Yeah.
And nobody's actually in it.
Yeah. He had some serious like star power. There was some, and it was crazy. And it was like magnetic. I mean, you'd see it at trade shows. And
he was someone, you know, he was either loved or hated, but always admired.
And a little bit of both from some people.
Yeah. But everyone always admired him no matter what.
I definitely, I mean, I know I've said this to you guys before, but as a, I admired the hell out of him, or I envied him for a long time. Like thought as we were building Wilderness Athlete, rebuilding Wilderness Athlete, I looked up to him. Like he Kuya was the first sponsor, camo sponsor of the Western Hunter, my dad's TV show. And I remember the dinner where he agreed to sponsor the show. And it was like, it was a kind of a formality. He had already decided he wanted it. He looked at my dad and said, "You're the got the best show on television. I'm in. You're the only show we're sponsoring. I'm in." And it was just like his, the presence, the way he made decisions, and then the way his company was growing at such a rapid pace. I just remember looking up and being like, I'm never going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And
he wasn't any different with product either.
Yeah.
I mean, developing product. I mean, he would just come in and be like, here's, I want to make this. I mean, for a while we were making Peloton arm warmers that were just sleeves and they ended up here, and he had saw them in cycling. He's like, that's awesome. You can wear sleeves, and then when it gets hot, you can tear them off.
It's funny because we actually worked on a product kind of similar to that when we had our athletic line. Remember the ones that like went around your back a little bit?
Yeah,
that's funny.
I mean, was it successful? No. But yeah. Jason was a guy that's like, you know what? Don't be scared to make a mistake. Don't
you know what scared me? Scared the crap out of me when I was first taking on more responsibility at Outdoorsman's. He posted, I think on the Kuyu Instagram, that he was working on a panhead at a machine shop.
I texted both you guys.
I remember that.
And I was, I was like, oh shit.
I was like,
because I know if this guy tries to come at us with, he can hurt us. Like because I can tell his passion and I can tell what the resources that he had compared to what we had at the time. I was like, please don't do that. And then I don't think anything ever happened with it. But I remember being a little, very nervous about that Instagram post.
Well, he said, I want to take over the world.
Yeah, totally. World domination.
He wanted to have and be the best in every product, in every category to do with anything that people used for mountain hunting.
Yeah. I mean, that was the reason we started carrying... Takes. Yeah, third-party gear was like, I want, if someone puts in Kuyu.com and they come to our website, I want them to get every single thing that they need to go on a hunt.
Yeah.
I don't want them going anywhere else.
Yeah.
Because we are the experts, and this is the headlamp that we say, and everyone should buy this headlamp, and, you know, no one should ever get off the phone with you without buying this product.
Right.
And he'd come into customer service almost daily and just be like, what are you guys hearing? What's the problems? Like, what is everyone
That's
saying?
So cool.
Yeah. And
he was so in the company.
To expand on that, it wasn't from the standpoint that I don't want any customer getting off the phone with you for not buying without buying the product for the sake of making the money off them. It was because he genuinely cared that every customer was going to go into the field as best prepared gear wise as they possibly could.
Yeah.
I love that.
And there's a huge difference between wanting to sell the stuff to make your money versus the reasons that he had.
So like this larger than life guy, because that's kind of like how we're talking about him, and he was. But I remember, I think it was the second time after the garage sale, we went over to his house for the barbecue afterwards. And I've never experienced that level of like star power with him, because like he was always around and I was just like, yeah, Jason's a really nice guy. He's always polite and, you know, says, hey, how you doing? Thanks for being here, this and that. But then we were sitting in their little back gazebo thing, and he sat down with me on the couch, and we talked about football for like an hour and a half. And it was just so cool that a dude, you know, who has all this coverage and notoriety in the hunting industry could also just sit there and talk shop with you, like at a very basic, you know, well, jock level, and just talk about football and like concussions and stuff that we got, you know, we related on.
And that's what we saw all the time interacting with him and working there on a daily basis, is that, you know, Jason comes across as one thing to the customer base, but when you're with him every day, he was just another one of the guys.
Yeah. I mean, he used to always come in and be like, you know, I don't care how successful this company is. I told Kirsten I could live in a trailer down by the river if I got to come here every day.
That's awesome.
And I mean, obviously, that's not what he had to do.
Yeah, obviously, he was doing all right.
Yeah, but I mean, he was that kind of guy. Yeah. I mean, he was such a presence, but it was really, you know, I can't say he was the most humble person in the world, but he was definitely humble enough to be like, you know, I don't really need all this stuff as long as I get to go hunting and make this gear.
And do this dream. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we have a joke in the office when the guys ask me like, or it's not a, I didn't make this up, but when the guys ask me how I am, most of the time my answer is living the dream. Because it's really, and it's not sarcastic. Like I would, and we've had years at this company where I didn't make any money or, you know, I was like scraping by when we were first kind of restarted everything. And it just doesn't, just being able to be here and like come and build something on a daily basis with people that I genuinely love, like is that I couldn't ask for anything else. Like, oh,
it's, we've said it before that coming here and seeing how you guys are doing things here and how you interact and how the different brands under the same roof get along. It's just, it reminds us of how it used to be there. And yeah, it's refreshing again.
Yeah. Okay. Can I get a little deep for a second? All right. But you know, he points at Ben.
Yeah.
Okay. So sweet. I remember the day that we heard that Jason killed himself. We were in the office and there was like it was on a forum somewhere and we all thought it was a joke. And I still like remember like the anxiety waiting to hear if that was true and the pain when I realized it was, and I'm like 6 degrees removed from that. What was that like that day?
Oh, I mean, every Wednesday we had a team meeting, so it wasn't anything different. And, you know, it was, you know, at that time, you know, customer service needed to stay because phones were on. We needed mm-hmm. to answer the phones. At that point, it was, we're turning off all the phones. We need everybody to come to the team meeting.
Yeah, usually it wasn't everybody.
Right. Someone's got to answer the phones.
Yeah. You know, you walk in and there's...
Well, we tried to call customer service and it was shut down. And we thought maybe someone just started a rumor because their phones aren't working. So someone started a rumor, you know, mm-hmm. and so go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, and you know, you go in and you know, there's board members there that usually you don't interact with.
Right.
And there's tears in some people's eyes who live locally and know what's going on. And it's like, okay, what the hell's going on? And it was just the only thing, you know, they could get out was that, you know, last night Jason passed.
Yeah.
And it was just like, what? And, you know, the room just goes silent and some people had to walk out and, you know, the rest of the day was just shot.
Obviously.
I mean, huge shock. I didn't see it coming. And most people there, you know, no one saw it coming.
Right.
For someone who looked like they had it all, was the happiest guy in the world for that to happen was just, you know, you do a lot of thinking after for sure.
Yeah, and it's weird to be in a room full of people when news like that is broken because, you know, you hear news like that and it doesn't set in right away. And it sets in at different paces for different people.
Yeah.
And we're this pretty tight team and we're all together and we get told the same thing all at once. And it's like all you could really tell is that everyone's having a hard time breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jason was the guy, like my wife always says it, like Jason, you know, there's not a lot of people at Kuyu that she's, you know, she worked there for a bit, actually for a few months when we moved up. And, you know, besides that, the newer people, you know, didn't really know her, but she always really liked seeing Jason because Jason would remember her name. He'd be like, oh, hey, Jackie, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And you know, you always looked up to him. Everybody loved Jason at Kuyu. He would come sit by your desk if you're a customer service rep and just ask you how you're doing and, you know, what problems that you're having and what you could see being doing better. And he was so within the company and sat down with every department, knew everything that was going on that it was just like, all of a sudden that was gone.
How do you even go on? Like,
there was a lot of times where it was just like, what's next? Like, what do we do? You don't even know what to do.
Did you go to work the next day? Did you?
Yeah. I mean, we got to, you know, they said like, you could either stay here today or you can go home. No one's going to hold it against you. And most people were like, like I'm going to stay. Like this was Jason's dream. This was Jason's passion and we helped build this and we want to make sure that it continues. But yeah, it was probably 3 or 4 weeks of just not knowing what was next, what was going to happen. What's the status of the company? Like Jason was the company. He was the brand.
Yeah.
He was the face. He was the personality. And all of a sudden all of that's gone.
Man. I can't imagine if anybody on this team, even if it was one of our customer service agents, like anything happened to anybody here. Like when you have a team, you know, when you're all working together, you know, towards a common goal and you're all on the same page with stuff, it's like a weird unifying feeling. And like if you lost anybody like that.
But for it to be your leader, and especially a leader like Jason, mm-hmm. I can't even, like, my chest feels tight and my eye, like, I'm tearing up just like even trying to imagine hearing that news and being so close. I can't even.
It's pretty tough to describe. And I mean that meeting, the moments in that meeting are like, gosh, so in the front of my head still.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, I mean, I remember the exact feeling of when they said it was just first at shock, like, is this real? Like, am I dreaming? Like, what's going on? Because
it's still to me, some days I think about it and I'm like, that wasn't real. Like, it's still like weird that it happened. Yeah. That
I mean, he was very open about his CTE. I mean, he was very open. He said he was doing treatments and, you know, I know he'd gone on interviews and talked about it. But I mean, it was never like anything that you saw. You know, you watch that movie Concussion that goes through all of it and those guys are a disaster before.
Yeah.
But, you know, all of a sudden this happens and you're like, wow, like this is a serious thing.
Man.
I remember I told you I was gonna and you guys know it. I learned a lesson from that, looking up to him and looking at someone else's life and envying them. And I learned a lesson through that was just live your life. You don't know what pain someone's going through. You don't know what hell someone's going through. And you just got to be grateful for what you have on a daily basis and never, you know, I've always thought, well, if I was, you know, more this or more that, maybe I could be as successful as someone like him. And then you hear that and it was just like, I don't know. We sat in my office and cried like, and we weren't, you know, we're not even.
That's tough. I looked up to Jason in a lot of ways just because he was always like a really just eye to eye conversational guy. Like you felt like he saw you, you know, and when he was sitting with me on the couch and we're talking about football, I was like, we had a real freaking conversation. That was badass, you know? And so it was just, it was kind of incredibly shitty news. But I think for me, it also, with like a lot of things like that, it just helps you feel grateful for the things you have.
Yeah.
You know, he was clearly tortured for a while with the things he was dealing with. And, you know, everyone has their stuff. So, you know, when you're grateful to be in the situation you are and who you're surrounded with and the team you have, which, I mean, it sounds like the guy was always grateful to have people like you, Todd, and Ben, people who like from the ground level, like got it, you know, there's always that difference between people who get it and who are just, you know, along for the ride. And I think I would have to imagine for a guy like that, such a pivotal leader and like a linchpin to the whole thing, people who get it and people who can actually drive his vision are invaluable. So,
We feel really grateful to have had that experience and, just be able to pick up what we could in our time getting to work with him and work for him.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for him, I'd still be dropping trash off at the dump. I mean, Todd sent me the text, but Jason was the one that was like, yeah, sure. Text him, have him come up, wire him.
Yeah. So you guys don't work for Kuyu anymore. This is a new chapter in your lives. What's next? Like, how do you, I don't want to say how do you honor that legacy, but how do you take everything that you learned and honor that legacy a little bit? And what do you want to do next?
Keep hunting your ass off.
Yeah. I mean, it's trying to, you know, maintain employment in the hunting industry and an industry that that we love. And that's not just hunting as much as you can. Cause if it was about hunting as much as we could, we'd probably go find jobs that were different or whatever.
Had 8 weeks paid vacation and made a lot more money. And
But I mean, there's every topic that comes up. I think we learned enough from our time with him and with that company that you can just kind of in your head analyze it and be like, well, what would Jason's take on this have been?
Yeah.
And, you know, you obviously put your own thoughts into things, but when you have this other voice and kind of a mentor that you've learned and heard a lot from, and you feel confident that you could kind of apply that way of thinking to similar situations, but maybe for a different company or maybe even stuff at home or on your own things, it's just kind of it gives a lot of confidence. On that you can get things done.
You gave me some advice yesterday when we were talking about the stud in the NLs. So to give some background, that Swarovski just came out with these new NL binoculars, and we build a stud at the Outdoorsman's that you can put them on a binocular adapter. There's all this talk on the internet about whether or not it's going to void the warranty and all this stuff. And I was frustrated with some posts that I saw online, and your response was, well, Jason, we'll just call that out and, you know, just tell him like, nope, this is not, you're wrong. And I'm always like, oh, am I being politically correct? Am I going to burn bridges in the industry? We did this thing with the NL studs that we're saying, the only way we're going to sell studs right now, because we have a limited supply, is if you buy your NLs from us. And there's people really pissed off at us right now. And I look at it through, you know, someone like Jason, who would always be looking for that competitive advantage and how to be the best, how to be the absolute best. I'm like, well, I think he might've been proud of that decision.
Yeah, it's like when people were questioning the frames, like, oh, your Kuyu frames break. Jason's like, oh, really? Hey, Pat, pull your truck over here. We're going to put it on the curb. We're going to drive your truck up it. We're going to film it. We're going to post that.
We ran an F-350 over our frame. There's a video on YouTube.
It's early on, I mean, there it was almost like a constant battle with stuff like you're talking about. And
remember the rock slide battle?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
It was like the cliff toss.
Yeah,
thing.
The cliff toss. Yeah.
He was the one that said, I'm not doing it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was enough that he goes, okay, I'm going to take cliff toss to a new level, and I'm going to roll it down this whole hill full of 60 pounds of stuff.
Nice. That's awesome. We dropped when we first came out with the Atlas trainer, the Outdoorsman's came out with the Atlas trainer. We loaded it up with 90 pounds and dropped it off of a shipping container. So like 10, 12 feet. Dropped it straight onto the ground, and it's so cool to see that thing work. Cool. Though you're like, and we did it in slow motion, and we're like, go ahead, if you can do worse to our pack than that, right, then I don't know what you're doing.
So one thing you said, Todd, which I kind of stood out to me, and you know you said trying to maintain employment in the hunting industry, you know, like, so I think a lot of people would hear that and be like, yeah, of course, you just want to stay within your sphere, and you know, who would not want to work in the hunting industry? But I think
anti-hunters.
Yeah, true. They might
PETA members.
They may not maybe apply not, to open jobs. That's true. But I think one of the things that you may have absorbed from Jason, knowingly or not, is a desire to stay within the hunting industry in a capacity that you could help people, right? Because like he authentically, like you said, cared about arming people with the right gear and the confidence to know that they could go as far as they just wanted to. Like their will was the only restriction. And I mean, that's kind of a lot of what we're trying to do here. And a lot of what Wilderness Athlete and Western Hunter and Outdoorsman's does is, you know, is not just giving people the gear, but, you know, educating them and giving them, you know, products that improve their lives in one capacity or another. And that was something that it sounds like was important to Jason too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's something really fulfilling, at least for me, about sharing knowledge and sharing experiences and helping people, which would be your customer base, feeling more prepared or whatever it takes to maybe help someone have a little bit more success in what they're passionate about.
Yeah.
We say here, Wilderness Athlete, our internal motto, like with our employees, is we are here to make our customers' lives better every damn day. And that it was just at first, it was we're here to make our customers' lives better. But when you don't add the every damn day part, it's you can make more concessions, right? But when you say it's every day, it's how you pack your box, how the back order status is handled, how Caitlin answers the phone, how, you know, we make marketing decisions. Like, is this email that we're sending actually benefiting our customers? Or are we just making noise? Mm-hmm. And it's a lot harder to not just make noise. And mm-hmm. it's so, I mean, and we see it all the time, all of our competitors and other, not all of them, but a lot of them, are just there to make noise and just there to get that sale. And like what you said about Jason, it's not that he wants you to get off the phone because he needs this, or get off the phone without buying something because he needs the money desperately, but because you're here to make your customers' lives better with every interaction that your company has.
And now with, you know, it's the internet age and social media it's like people or certain companies might think that they can stay relevant just because they can easily keep their logo or themselves in front of eyes, mm-hmm. scrolling eyes all the time. But I really think in order to set yourself apart over time and continue growing and being successful, you got to do more than that.
Yeah. You have to have people, and it has to be authentic, like we've talked about, and a level of transparency that people can relate to. Like one thing I love, I was telling you guys earlier about Caitlin, our newest customer service agent. She's just freaking awesome. And on the phone, she calls everyone my friend. Thanks, my friend. And on emails too. And my partner Floyd called me and he goes, I just had to call the office and deal with trying to comp an order for one of his friends or something. And he goes, right when I got off the phone, Caitlin said to me, thanks, my friend. And he called and he was like, that is the number one customer experience I've ever had, customer service experience I've ever had. He's like, I was speechless. I didn't know what to say to that.
Right.
And I'm like, how that simple thing where she's like, no, this is my friend, you know, is so, in, especially in the age of the internet and social media, everything's so fake. There's no real interaction, you know?
If we learn anything from Michael Scott, he always said, business is about people. People, Ryan. People.
Thanks.
It's true. Time and time again.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And that's what Jason always drove home. And you know, it got lost along the way after that the customer was, you know, the number one thing. And you always want to make sure that the customer is right. But that's something I've always kept from him was that, like, it's always the customer is always number one. Make sure that the customer is taken care of. I don't care about my product. I don't care about our bottom line. Like, make sure the customer is taken care of. Yeah.
And it's so gratifying, too. I'm sure you guys have been at trade shows or on the phones or whatnot when the customer calls and tells you that they had a successful hunt and thanks you or says, like, I mean, for us, a lot of times it's guys that are like, I couldn't, my knees were so, you know, inflamed, I couldn't walk and I took your product and I felt better and I was able to get out of there. And it's like, oh, wow. Like, that's so freaking cool. Yeah, you did that. You made fulfilling. That happen.
That's
yeah.
one of the things that I don't even think it's fully set in yet that I think we're going to miss the most from potentially. And I hope trade show season in 2021 doesn't get, you know, totally just canceled. Kiboshed. But one of the things that was like the most, like this one of our few, you know, chances to like interface with our customer, but to see people who can just, you can just tell from the way they tell stories and give you their praise for like how it improved their life. Like, you can't replace that. Mm-mm. You know, you see the impact you have on their life and it, you know, helps them be more mobile or helps them have more energy and helps them be better family people or more successful in their job. And, you know, it just percolates and similar to gear, you know, I mean, like, supplements and gear isn't all that different. I mean, I know obviously they're vastly different categories at the store, but you know, someone who's hunting more confidently or who feels better in the equipment they're using, or just it gives them an edge in some way, shape, or form, whether it's mental or physical, you know, that little bit of a push can make all the difference in the world for them. You know, and that's I hope we get it back. I hope I'm
and not only that, but getting to see them come back, say the next trade show season, and report back with how things went for them or improvements that they noticed. Then in return, that's fulfilling for you as the person who kind of started them in that right direction. Yeah,
that's the best feeling in the world. I don't think there's one trade show season that has gone by that I don't like cry a little bit when a customer tells me a story, like especially now that we have Canine Athlete, because I've had a customer tell me stories about their dogs just like living longer, feeling better. And I'm just like, that's the most fulfilling feeling in the world. And I think some people don't get to do this for a living. And I think maybe an important lesson if you're, you know, listening and stuck in a 9-to-5 job where you don't feel effective or you don't feel like what you do matters, like then find something else in your life that gives you that that satisfaction. What can you do? I mean, and I'm not even like a very like overly charitable person. I'm very much like a capitalist but what can you do in your life that makes the world a better place just a little bit or makes the people around you a little, just a little bit better? There's nothing to me more gratifying than that.
There was a guy last year at the Sheep Show that I've never been so like, just like taken back with this guy. Cause he told me his life story with his battle with sleeplessness. He's gone through a million sleep studies. He's tried every prescription sleep medication there is. He's tried every remedy and, you know, hocus pocus stuff he could find because he just has had like 15 plus years of his life. He's just struggled with insomnia and it's just ruined his life. Like it's ruined his marriage. He's ruined his job. He's ruined everything because it's just, you know, without sleep.
Can't imagine.
Yeah, right. I mean, and
sleep is my second favorite thing to do.
We take it for granted.
Other than
we're
awake.
We're bummed when we just don't get much sleep last night. Like the other day I was complaining because I got like 3 hours of sleep and I was like, man, I'm cranky. But then I heard
we're really cranky.
I know. And then this guy's story was like, he's been riding this road for 15 years. And he was interested in our product Unplug. And I just was so like invested in this guy's story that I hoped dearly. And I gave him my card and I told him, like, let me know. Like, how does this, I just want to know if it doesn't work, which just from the statistics of it, it sounds like it's not going to cure everything. But like, I would like to know, you know, if it has any kind of help. And
Did you hear from him?
No, never did.
I thought the story had a happy
ending.
What?
No, I know. I wish I did.
You're fired.
He started taking Unplugged.
Hey, it's still woke up.
Jesus.
It still might. I mean, he still may reach out to me.
He's probably still sleeping.
He's probably still sleeping. He's catching up to do. 15 years.
And now Sheep Show's canceled, so you won't see him this year.
So that was my point, is that like, those are the things that you're not going to be able to get through email, even phone conversation. You can't get that.
Yeah. The face to face is just at a trade show is just,
if they cancel the rest of the trade shows in 2021, I'm going to be so sad. We'll figure out how to connect with our customers, but I look forward to trade show season now, especially more every year. Like, I thought I'd start getting burnt out, and Floyd and my dad always tell me, oh, it'll happen. Don't worry. You'll get burnt out. But every year I look forward to them more. Cause you get like, we get customers now that like, I know first name basis. Like, they've met them for 5 years in a row.
We do trade shows better though than they did, because last year or somewhere along the way, we realized that we can't, you know, drink our faces off and stay up all night.
Yeah, you gotta sleep a little bit.
You gotta sleep. And once we started like being boring old people and like getting to bed at a reasonable time and having
and working out every morning,
like trade shows are freaking enjoyable because you're like thriving, and like by midway through the day, you're like, you're in the conversation, you're in it, and it's a cool, you're glowing, you know. Anyways, we're off topic.
Yeah, now we're just talking. We're supposed to be interviewing them. I know. This is what happens with you.
I know.
You talk so much.
So, Todd, you have a crazy hunt schedule this year. Actually, you have a pretty gnarly hunt. Some may never have experienced their entire life in just a few weeks.
Yeah, coming up on August 24th, I'm going to be going with a couple buddies up to Alaska on a doll sheep hunt.
That's so cool.
And those two guys have tags. It's another friend of ours who's the guide who's going to be taking us, and I got invited to go along and just experience it and carry my weight and help out how I can and just enjoy the whole thing. So we're going to be hunting for it's a 10-day hunt with two sheep tags, backpacking and in the gnarliest mountains up there.
That's something cool. So many people never get to experience. In fact, you're going to experience it at what? You're 30.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
So one thing that we've talked about several times is how like excited you guys both are to like have the first season in like 7 years. We're using all of this different gear that you've never really had the freedom to be able to use, because you know and everyone knows how this is. You know, you work for a company. I felt the same way. You know, at numerous times when I worked for Outdoorsman's and Wilderness Athlete,
you still work for Wilderness Athlete.
Yeah, yeah. But when I worked for Outdoorsman's, I had a Kafaru pack.
And you're taking a Kafaru pack. I know that's
different. There's logistics involved there.
Logistics. You just want to take your new pack.
I do. No, not that pack.
New one.
So, I'm excited for you guys to kind of like experience, because I can't imagine, because at Wilderness Athlete, the only way that we can build quality products for our customers is by experiencing, you know, everything and anything that's out there.
Because we take a lot of other people's supplements.
The world of nutrition is just so overly saturated that how can you speak the language or see what people are experiencing if you're always just living in your little ecosystem? Mm-hmm. So we have always looked beyond that, but I know other brands aren't always as like favorable to that kind of stuff. So what are some of the things, like, I know clothing, gear, all that kind of stuff. Like,
well, I mean, yeah, well, you're looking at two guys that, I mean, almost seven years of dedicating our life to, I mean, Kuyu had everything from clothing to boots to sleeping bags.
And we all know the key part of being in the hunting industry is you never pay retail. So why would you go pay retail if you could just, you know, get your employee discount or your free stuff?
But I mean, you're forced to learn about all of this gear so that you can, you know, reiterate that information to the customer. And not only that, but we hunt, so we want the best. Mm-hmm. And now we get to go off on our own and take all of those years of knowledge that we've learned and then buy whatever we want and go out and find what's better. So I'm really excited this year. You know, it's just a smorgasbord of gear and everything, you know. not a ton of things that are overlapping from brands. Like, I want to just completely spread it out. Find out what I want.
Only a couple hunters would say, you know, the economy is really unstable. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I'm in between jobs. I'm going to go spend a lot of money on gear. Seems like a really safe bet right now.
Well, the cool thing for us is we're kind of more of the solid color hunters anyway. We aren't huge on you have to have this camo and be head to toe in it in order to be camo successful.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, we're totally open to solids. We actually prefer solids, which then opens us up to pretty much any brand that makes a solid color.
Mm-hmm.
Do you match during your hunts? Because it seems like you guys do a lot of things together. Do you plan your outfits
together? We actually try to get like if he's wearing a brown
so
pant,
you do I'll plan your outfits.
No.
Well, rather be matching Todd than head to toe camo.
Right.
Yeah.
If you had to pick one of two evils.
Yeah.
One of the, correct if I'm wrong, but like, I mean, in the early days of like Kuyu and like when Jason and, when Jason started it, a lot of it was based off of the things they were seeing in the mountaineering and, mm-hmm. and that industry, it's always been, I mean, in a lot of regards, the hunting industry is always a few years behind a lot of the other cutting edge.
Let's call it a decade,
you know, like we're discovering flip phones when you know, they're onto iPads kind of stuff. So that's what's kind of exciting too, is like, I feel like it's a refresh of being able to experience what's out there.
And we've been re-gearing with mountaineering brands. We've got Arc'teryx stuff and
our new tents
Dyneema composite tents, which is, you know, Jason's whole thing was we're direct to consumer, so we can use the best materials and make the best products and sell them at a reasonable price. But I mean, this Dyneema composite tent material, Kuyu's not making tents out of that stuff. And we've got 2-person tents that are Dyneema that we'll be using this year that are less than half the weight of the 2-person tents we were using before.
I'll have a Kuyu tent.
And that's just one example of one item.
Kevin will take all your old Kuyu stuff.
No.
Once the cancel culture, whatever this thing where everything's canceled, is over, we need to go to OR, Outdoor Retailer, mm-hmm. and just geek out. And you'd let you guys geek out on gear and write about it and carry it at the Outdoorsman's. And that's one thing we've always said we need to make a goal to do better merchandising at the Outdoorsman's outside of the hunting industry. And we've had a lot of success with bringing other companies in that the hunting industry doesn't know about. Swarovski being the first one, you know, 25 years ago or however long it was. But we need to go do that, and you guys can just geek out, and you don't have to be pigeonholed in this little industry. It's something we get frustrated with, because the hunting industry is tiny compared to the world out there. It's tiny compared to the gun industry. You go to SHOT Show and hunting is like 10% of that.
Hunting clothing is even smaller. I mean, now that we're looking around, it's like, there really isn't a ton of options.
No.
Why would somebody only stick to the hunting industry?
That's why we get so frustrated with supplements, because people are like, well, is it, have you chosen between Mountain Ops and Wilderness Athlete? I'm like, have you looked at the rest of the world? There's some really good supplements out there, like really good stuff that we use that's maybe too niche for us to make, or it's just not our target. And I'm like, I can give you 10 brands that I think you should try in the supplement industry for like certain niche things that you might need. And none of it's from quote unquote hunting companies, but we get so like pigeon-toed by this identity of who we are.
It's like, there's enough in the hunting industry for clothing.
Pigeon-toed. Sorry, go ahead.
There's enough.
That's you.
Clothing products within the hunting industry realm that I think most consumers feel like they have a good selection and they can find what they need. But what we've found by reaching, you know, branching back into including all outdoor technical apparel brands there, if you think there's a lot of clothes in the hunting industry with camo on it, there's way more out there if you open up to solids and branch into these different brands, especially the niche brands that have been popping up. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're getting made in USA Dyneema composite dry bags that are made in these small shops that have tiny websites that are so much lighter in performance benefits versus stuff in the hunting realm that we're just kind of excited to write about.
I'm really excited about you guys coming on to Western Hunter, because you're going to be able to bring that knowledge to our readership, and people are going to learn a lot from you. I'm excited.
Hopefully.
I think where a lot of people get hung up with that that decision of who to spend money with, it, and a lot of times it becomes just, well, I, you know, I'd rather spend money who with people who believe in the things I do, pro hunting companies, you know. So if I'm going to buy supplements, I'm going to buy them from a company who of like mind, you know, or to support the, my passion. And right, like I completely understand that too. But, you know, I think that also kind of feeds into some of that adversarial friction that separates us between the other brands that you would see at OR, like Patagonia's, the Mountain Hardware, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're cognizant of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's because it's real. You know, there's definitely some ideologies out there and some beliefs at a corporate level that oppose the lifestyle that we believe in and live. Yeah.
And we are, you know, aware of that enough to we're buying stuff that's looking into that a little bit first.
Well, so to that point, that's to your guys' credit, you do your homework. And I think a lot of people, by just shopping within your little hunting ecosystem, that's not doing your homework, man. That's just, you know, opening your eyes to Instagram.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's going to stick it to them more than too? Like if that's a brand that you're like, oh, well, you know, they don't support hunting. Well, if they don't support hunting, they're not going to be very happy when you're sitting there with a big old buck
and your
front and center got their logo.
Right.
And you're like, you know what? Well, then your stuff works for us and we're going to start buying it and you're not going to be able to stop us.
We're seeing that so much more. And I got really frustrated during the beginning of COVID. And then I'm just going to say it during the Black Lives Matter movement too, where all these companies felt like they needed to come out and take a stand. Mm-hmm. And that's totally your prerogative. And like, we took stands on certain things and that's your prerogative as a business owner. What I got frustrated with was how far social media went and people went with like blackballing. Is that the word? Like drawing a line and not doing business with the companies who weren't coming out to take a stand. There was all this stuff on social media. Mm. So-and-so hasn't posted where they stand on
this. There was pages solely dedicated to finding companies who hadn't taken a stance on being pro Black Lives Matter. Like regardless of where you fall on the opinion, I'm not casting a vote there. I'm just saying that just seems like a waste of a really like egregious waste of like
our resources energy. as a nation. Why do we have to make everything an issue? And there are definitely obviously issues that you need to stand up for as an individual. But when I'm buying a pair of pants, I'm going to just buy the best pair of pants. And unless you've done something that's like, you know, you're enslaving children in some obscure in Ethiopia or something, then
what if it's what you didn't do?
Exactly. It's like, you know, like it's and like, we worried, like, are we going to get, and the hunting industry is different, I think, in that regard. But I got really frustrated with that. Like, sometimes you just need to like, just buy a pair of pants and buy the best pair of pants. Like, do we really need to make everything a social issue?
Yeah.
And I'm probably, I mean, maybe someone will disagree with this. A lot of people will probably disagree with that. But
maybe not our listeners.
I'm here to make the best products in the world and to make money doing it and to make my employees make money doing it and to make our customers happy. That's it. Like, just leave it be.
In that order? Not necessarily. No.
Because, no, my first priority is making sure all of our employees are happy. And then after that.
I mean, you definitely want your product to speak for itself.
Right.
You don't want people, you know.
I don't there's need to get
brands out
political.
There that, you know, we are going to get everybody who has influence on Instagram to use our product. Well, there, right away, that's a purchased opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to buy product because that guy's wearing it. Because he got it for free.
Yeah.
Instead of just making your own assumption and doing your own research and buying what you think is
doing
best.
Doing your homework. Yeah. Yeah.
You're really closing yourself off to like, I mean, so many things, like so many materials and technologies and ideas and strategies and designs. If you're just looking at, you know, one little, you know, pie slice of clothing.
We all need to learn to do business with everybody and work together and not make every, you know.
Well, that being said, you know, what I'm for is doing your homework. Like what you've said is you've done your homework to figure out the brands that work for you that are, you know, that you can be more or less on the same page with. But, you know, I think it takes doing a little bit more homework than just opening Instagram to figure out where to spend your money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a small company that I've got some stuff on the way for, actually a couple new Dyneema pack rain covers. Etowah Outfitters, a couple guys down in Georgia. They've been in business for 30 years. I talked to him on the phone. And you can tell by these websites, you know, they're not fancy, but you read the materials they're using and can see the pictures, and you know they're made in USA, and you do a little bit of research around and you might find a thread about their products that's on, you know, a backpacking light type forum, and just using resources that aren't strictly hunting to do your own vetting and teach yourself about their products and then make the decision to buy it. And, you know, call the guy up and find out that he's a hardcore hunter too. But for them to, in their small business that they've been doing for 30 years, they just haven't felt the need to put themselves out there as a hunting brand.
Yeah.
They're just a lightweight, high quality gear brand. There's a lot of them out there.
Plus, you know, like we, you know, this sleeping bag that we got, you know, it's handmade up in Seattle.
The Feathered Friends.
Yeah, Feathered Friends.
I got to order one of those tonight.
And I mean, yeah, they're not a hunting brand. They may not be out, you know, supporting hunting.
In fact, you can, might even think by the name Feathered Friends that they're anti-hunting.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you do a little research and they're not.
But it's made in America.
Yeah.
Or you can buy one from a hunting company.
That's probably more who's made in Vietnam. Anything.
Right.
So like, where are you going to stem? They might not be Pick supporting hunting, but they're supporting... Yeah. They're employing Americans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there, you know.
Which right now is one issue I can get on board with. Coming from, and I'm obviously speaking from a couple companies that make all of our products in the United States, obviously something we believe in. But that is an issue I can, especially right now, get on board with.
Yeah.
Supporting American-made products.
Yeah. It might be a controversial opinion. And but, you know, if you had to pick between supporting one issue or the other, whether it's supporting a pro-hunting company or just a company that's supporting our country's economy as being a made-in-USA company, I think the greater good is supporting a company that is supporting the people who are manufacturing goods in our economy. You know, I mean, yeah, we love hunting. It's passionate. But what is it without our
country? We're not all going to hunt if our economy crashes. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, let's think about the hierarchy of that.
Yeah, and just because it's a hunting company, do you really know what they stand for?
Yeah.
Just where is it made?
Where is it made?
That's who works. That's a big question.
There? Yeah.
Well,
who's making the decisions?
One of the things that I'm really excited for, because, you know, Todd, going back to like our college days, you used to be super active on, you know, blacktailcountry.com for any listeners who might remember that. And you were always talking and reviewing and selling different stuff, you know, and it was just always different stuff. And, you know, Ben, I think that you guys are both going to bring a really cool perspective.
Hey, don't forget, I was there. And
oh, yeah, I remember. I remember when I bought that spotting scope off.
I was living the college lifestyle without the college tuition.
We drank a few beers. We drank a few beers that day. I came over and bought that spotting scope off of Todd for probably way too much money because it was my first spotting scope.
It was about the time I bought his Kuyu pack.
Yeah, yeah.
The one he broke the frame on.
Yeah, exactly.
Todd, you should work in sales.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm just pumped to see where your guys' minds and breadth of experience in the industry and outside of it, you know, how that comes and, you know, changes our team a little bit and, you know, helps us help people and see what kind of growth we can see.
I dig it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll probably catch up. We'll do another one because we have a hunt planned this year and we've got a whole bunch of other stuff planned this year that we can
Well, we're trying to convince these two to Todd and Ben to start the Outdoorsman's podcast if they come on. So you might be hearing more of them.
We're going to have a tailgate podcast at the trailhead this year for sure. That I think will be fun.
Before and after.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we should wrap it up and go to dinner.
Probably.
Sounds good. Right.
All right, guys.
Thanks for listening. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Four Peaks 8th Street Ale. When you need to get drunk and have a good time on a podcast with your friends, 8th Street Ale is the way to go.